D. Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. Pleased to be joined, as always, by Sportsnet NHL insider Elliot Freeman, who joins the program now. He is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Hi, Elliot. How are you?
I'm old. How are you guys doing?
We are doing well. You are not old. You are distinguished. How about that?
I like that. I like the way you think, Adam.
Thank you. Well, I'm making up for the, you know, I said you were just all right a couple weeks ago when I went more than all right. So I'm just trying to make up for that. But, Elliot, we were all flabbergasted by the Minnesota Wild being the team to step up and acquire Quinn Hughes late last week. So now that Hughes is off the market, which name brand player do you have your eyes on now as a potential trade?
Are you asking me this because I'm on radio in Nashville?
I wasn't, but you can go there if you'd like.
You know, hey, Derek, I see you yawning. Am I boring you or
something? Oh, no, I'm not
yawning.
Did I yawn?
I didn't see a yawn.
Yeah, I don't think I yawned.
I looked like you were yawning there.
Oh, no, not at all. You never bore me, man. Okay. You always come with
just
good stuff.
Just making sure. You know, I think the Nashville guys are going to be interesting. Look, he's not as big a name, but there is kind of a unique situation going on in Los Angeles right now involving a center by the name of Philip Deneau. Deneau is signed a six-year contract with the Kings 5 years ago after he left Montreal. He was a really good player for them. He was basically their second-line center for a chunk of it behind future Hall of Famer Anja Kopitar, who's retiring after this year. Now with Quentin Byfield playing center for them, he's kind of their third line center, and this year has gone very poorly for him. And there have been some rumors that he might want out or they might want to trade him, and his name's definitely been out there. He got sick last weekend. He didn't play. He's still not playing. They were on a road trip. They lost to Florida last night, and I've just been told it's a really complicated situation. I think both sides would like to move on, but it's so hard to find centers right now. Like the Kings, with Kopitar retiring and Deneau under contract for one more year, they don't want to trade him unless they get a center, and they don't want to get worse, and they do need him. And he played, you know, even though they've had a nightmare in the playoffs the last 3 years, they can't beat Edmonton. He's been pretty good in those series. So I think he wants out. I think they want to trade him. But I just don't think that they can find a trade because they need a center back, and those are so hard to find. So that would be a name right there. And you know what? I still think New Jersey, which we had a big win last night in Vegas, is looking at a couple of your guys. So we'll see. I mean, I guess it was reported that today that the new owner, Bill Haslam, and Nick Saban are meeting with the media on Monday.
That is correct.
So I think we'll, assuming it doesn't happen before then, I think we're going to get a better picture. Like, as I said, I met Bill Haslam briefly in Colorado last week, and he kind of said he wasn't ready to talk yet. So I think everybody's very curious to hear what he has to say.
So, Elliot, now that the New Jersey Devils have missed out on Quinn Hughes, we expected the Devils to be the landing spot. You have talked about Stamkos, O'Reilly, perhaps being linked to the Devils. Does missing out on Quinn Hughes ratchet up the pressure or accelerate the Devils' desire to get something done, not specifically with Stamkos or O'Reilly, but just in general?
Well, I think it definitely has ratcheted up the pressure on them. Like, you know, there's two things. Number one, at the beginning of the year, they were ravaged by injuries. They were one of the first teams to do it, and they overcame it. They were 13-4-1. They were really doing a great job. But then Jack Hughes, who is getting closer, it sounds like, he had that fluke injury at the dinner a couple weeks ago, and he's been out. And since then, they've really dried up. They've really battled before that big win last night, and they've fallen out of a playoff berth, even though the East is jammed tight. They're out. And, you know, I think the fans, they were really disappointed that they didn't get Quinn Hughes, Jack's brother. I think there was almost like this, you know what it's like? It's like people were like, Quinn Hughes is anointed to go to the Devils. Everybody thought it was a fait accompli. It was obvious. And whether it happened now or it happened later, it was going to happen. And the fact that Minnesota kind of came out of nowhere to swipe him away, it's made some of those fans really unhappy. Now, I think a little bit of this may not have happened as people believe. Like, one of the things that we talked about, and I talked about it too, is that they have no cap room, and the narrative has become that they couldn't trade for him because they couldn't clear the cap room. And I don't believe that's 100% true. I do think they've had some players use their no-trade clause to veto deals, but I also think there was a point in this Quinn Hughes process, Adam, where they realized they were not going to be able to get him. They realized they were going to be outbid for him. And they said, we can't not get Hughes and trade people off our roster when we're already shorthanded due to injury. So I think they kind of walked away from that whole situation. I still think they're going to clear cap room, and I still think they're going to be busy. And, you know, I've said this before on your show, and I'll say it again. They've liked O'Reilly for some time. Do they get him? I don't know, but they like him.
Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet is with us. Elliot, the Predators lost a tough one last night to the Carolina Hurricanes, but before that loss, Nashville had won 7 of 10. And it got me wondering, and I'm going to ask you this question. Have you gotten any sense that Barry Trotz's mindset has changed at all with the Predators winning more consistently as of late?
No, I don't think it's changed a ton. I think they recognize that the group has to get a little bit younger and have some fresh blood. I think they're really happy to see that they've been more competitive. You know, the fans pay harder money for those tickets. You want to give them a good show. You want to give them some wins. And lately they have done that, including Stamkos's very impressive 4-goal game. But, I mean, you still look up, and I check the standings. They're still 7 points out of the playoffs. It's a big challenge. They got to leap over a lot of teams. And I just think that even if they were charging up the standings, they would look at it and say they still need new blood, fresh blood, some new energy. So I really do feel that he will continue to be committed to that. You know, the thing, too, I think we've all kind of wondered, like, that's why next Monday is so big. I think first of all, I thought that was really interesting how Saban was announced the other day. I think that's pretty cool. I think it's even more amazing that he's actually going to be up there at the press conference. Like, I'm curious to see, like, is Saban actually going to have, like, any kind of, I don't even know if decision-making role is the right word, but, like, any kind of role at all. And, like, as somebody said to me today, is Nick Saban the new president of hockey operations of the Predators? And I was like, I can't imagine that's the case. But I think it's fascinating. I just think, Adam, we're going to get an idea of what Haslam's vision is. Because the one thing I did hear at the Board of Governors was, and one other governor said to me, he goes, you get a lot of things wrong, but one thing you got right is that this guy's asking a lot of questions. And he's asking people, like, what do I need to know? What do I have to be aware of? So I'm really curious to see what his vision is, but I don't think Trotz's has changed.
Now, it seems like, Elliot, you know, you bring it up, Nick, and I was going to ask you that question. It seems like you answered the bulk of it. But it does seem like now that he's become a part of the ownership group, it seems like those that are, you know, that you're around and are in the hockey world, they look at this as being a positive. Is that a true assessment of it, or is everyone still trying to grasp, you know, Coach Saban being a part of the hockey world?
And Elliot, just so you know, I didn't know if you knew this or not, but Derek played for Nick Saban at Michigan State years ago.
Who played?
No, I played for Nick.
D-Mace played for Nick Saban in college.
Yes.
Before he went to LSU.
I didn't hear you say D-Mace. I'm a really interesting guy. I actually am a fan. I actually find Nick Saban very interesting, and I follow this whole career from like the Kent cradle of coaches all the way out here. So I didn't, I just didn't hear you clearly, Willie. I'm sorry. I'll clean my ears when I get off the air here. Well, you know what, like Derek, like, mm-hmm. like you know him, like, mm-hmm. how is it bad? Like, to have like that guy in your organization, the guy, someone who's been as successful as he is, someone who might have a fresh way of ideas of looking at things. I don't think something like that is ever bad. You know, I just couldn't imagine he'd be expected to give like advice on personnel decisions or anything like that. Maybe he might be talking about what makes a good organization, what makes a team successful, why some cultures win and some cultures lose. And if Nick Saban walked up to me and I was the GM of the Nashville Predators and he said, look, this is what worked for me, you're right. I would sit there for an hour and take notes because he knows something, right? But I just couldn't imagine that he'd be coming in as sort of like just any kind of personnel decision maker. It would be wild. Like, I don't know if A.J. McCarron's going to solve the center problems for the Nashville Predators.
Good name from the past. Well done, exactly. Elliot. We had a good talk with Barry Trotz earlier this week about that very thing, and he told us, he shared with us, there already have been some, and they've played some clips of it. He went in and talked to the rookies, for example, at the training camp behind the scenes. Nobody knew it at the time, but they shared that. And Barry Trotz has said he's really enjoyed just talking coach to coach. Andrew Brennan and the coaching staff have talked to him. I think Nick Saban just enjoys talking to coaches and learning about stuff. And that Barry Trotz says that has already been valuable.
You know what, Willie? I think coaches are like that. And I bet you Andrew Brennan probably likes it as much as, or Barry Trotz likes it as much as Nick Saban does. Like, I remember when Claude Julien was the head coach of the Boston Bruins, they had the four coaches there were Claude Julien, Bill Belichick, I think Terry Francona was still there, and I think Brad Stevens was the coach of the Celtics at the time. And Claude told me that, like, they had, I don't know if they had a group chat or something, but they would talk to each other. And he said that was some of his favorite times in Boston, was being able to talk to those other guys about what they were going through. Like, I think that kind of stuff happens all the time. And I think they like comparing what works in your sport, what doesn't work in your sport. Like, I think these, like, for lack of a better term, I think a lot of these guys are like kind of geeky. And I say that in a good way. They like hearing this kind of thing. I like hearing that kind of thing. And, you know, I'll remember in 2017 during the Stanley Cup final, our set was in a box that was right next to the box that Nick Saban was in. So a couple of times we were doing our show and Nick Saban, like, he was kind of looking over and seeing how it all worked. And then he'd get back to his group. Like, it was, I didn't want to bother him or anything like that, but I thought it was really, like, a couple times during our hits, I saw him looking over to see how it kind of all worked. I thought that was really interesting.
Elliot, you've got the Maple Leafs coming in on Saturday night, which was always fun. I've always wondered how much the Nashville audience is aware when Hockey Night in Canada is in town. It's like such a big deal up there where you are, but in Nashville, is it just another Saturday night? I don't know. The game time's different, right? That's what people will notice, right? It's a little earlier.
For you guys, yeah, you play at 6, right? Because television ruins everything. Yep.
Sure. So give people that are going to the game maybe a sense of where the Leafs are right now.
Well, they got a big game tonight. It was funny. So I like to go. I like to sit in the crowd a couple games a year. I really miss it. It's not something I get a chance to do that often. And they were starting to grind. They were starting to be a little bit better. And then on Tuesday night, they had a really rough game. They fell behind. Chicago doesn't have Connor Bedard. He's not playing right now. And they fell behind 2-0 pretty quick. And that crowd was getting really restless. Like, they were booing at times and they were grumbling and they were losing late, and they scored 2 goals in 8 seconds late in the third period, and they won the game. And people went from "this sucks" and booing them to "what a great game tonight." Like, it's kind of funny how quickly that flips. But there was a pretty interesting play. The 2-2 goal with about 3 minutes to play was Austin Matthews on the power play. And he's been struggling a bit. And after he scored, he put his hand to his ear like Hulk Hogan. And, you know, and he heard, and he admitted, like, he heard the boos, and he was just, he said he was trying to rally their guys. And as you can imagine, it has been 48 hours of nonstop talk about that cup to the ear up here. And, you know, personally, I didn't mind it. I think you have to be very careful when you take a run at your own fans. But the thing is, like Austin Matthews, like a lot of great players in any sport, when they're at their best, they're a little bit defiant. There's a bit of ego there. There's a bit of sass there. There's a bit of an edge there. There's a bit of, oh, yeah, like, I'll show you. And we hadn't seen a lot of that from him this year. So the fact that he showed that emotion, I kind of liked it. They've got a big game tonight. They're in Washington. Washington beat them pretty badly earlier this year. And they're, I mean, they are battling to make the playoffs. Now, Saturday night's a big night. Willie, the only thing I don't like about it is that I'm not in Nashville too. Like, my broadcast partner, Kyle, is the ringside reporter for the game, and he's flying there tomorrow morning. And I already told him how jealous I am of him that he gets a weekend in Nashville. But it's like all these games for Toronto now are massive games. Like, they dug themselves a hole, and they've got to dig out of it.
Yeah, the Predators have the Rangers the next night, another team right in that mix of teams. Yeah. So it's going to be an interesting weekend for the Predators here. So, Elliot, there's so much talk around the league, especially since the Hughes trade, that you have these three super teams in the Central Division, the Predators division, and they seem to be head and shoulders above everybody else in the division, at least for now. And everybody's already talking about the same thing. Two of these teams are going to play in the first round. One of them's going to be out. And I feel like if you did a vote of all hockey people, all hockey fans, it would be so overwhelming to go back to the 1-8. You've talked about this before, but why do you think the commissioner is so defiant about that particular thing?
I wish I had a good answer. I think some of it is stubbornness. I really do. I do think that's a thing. I know that years ago, I always do wonder too if TV plays a factor. And I remember a few years ago in the NHL, they used to have a setup where the highest seeded, like after the first round of all the teams left standing, highest seed would play lowest seed and the two middle seeds would play each other. And he told me that US TV wanted them to end that. US TV wanted a bracket. So I know there have been times they have made decisions for that kind of reason. I think there a little bit is like, I do think some of it is, you know, hey, we want to create rivalries, and the best way to do it is this way. The one thing I will say though, Willie, is, if this was such a big deal to everyone, why didn't it get dealt with in the CBA that got done for this year? Like, you know, like the players really fought to make Olympic hockey a priority, and now they're going this coming year, and they're going in 4 years. They got that done. So I think if it really mattered, I mean really mattered to people here, it might have gotten done now.
Elliot, before we let you go, because we won't talk to you next Thursday because, of course, it's Christmas. So I think the next time we're going to talk to you is after Team Canada announces its roster for the Olympics. So I am going to ask you to look into your crystal ball and tell me what the most controversial roster decision that Team Canada is going to make that is going to absorb a lot of your time on Sportsnet, on your podcast, when this announcement is made on New Year's Eve.
If Bedard makes it or doesn't.
That's over the goalie, huh? I say this because the Predators just had a huge game against Binnington, and we were talking about that.
You know, I'll tell you this. Like, Willie, Jordan Binnington could have a save percentage of 200.
And it's moving that direction, you know.
Yeah, I know. I'd still put him on the team. Like, last year, he played the game of his life on the stage of his life to win. Now, is he going to end up being the starter? Is he going to end up playing the big games? No, I don't know that. That's still to be determined. But Willie, if I was running that team, he would be on Team Canada because of that game last year. And I think that will happen. I, I actually think the like Macklin Celebrini, who plays for San Jose, I think he's a lock. I think he's going to be on this team. The biggest one's going to battle is going to be Bedard and whether or not he gets in or not.
If it's not Bedard, who do you think it's going to be? You did a great piece, by the way, on Tom Wilson. I know Tom Wilson is firmly in the running. Nick Suzuki. So if not Bedard, who? Wilson or Suzuki?
So I think there's about six or seven guys. I think Wilson's on. I think there's about six or seven guys who are for two or three spots. And I think Wilson's going to be on the team. I think Celebrini's going to be on the team. So I'm looking at like five newcomers for Connor Bedard, Nick Suzuki from Montreal, Bo Horvat from the Islanders, Wyatt Johnston from the Dallas Stars, Mark Scheifele from Winnipeg, who you guys know well, and three returning forwards I think are kind of in this gray zone. Anthony Cirelli from Tampa, Travis Konecny from Philadelphia, and who's the other? Seth Jarvis from Carolina. I think it's like eight guys for two or three spots. That's what I think it is.
Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet has been our guest on D-Maze. Vingan and Donick. He is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, because we won't talk to you next week, have a wonderful holiday. Happy New Year. And if we run into Kyle on Saturday, we'll mess up his perfectly coiffed hair for you as punishment for him going to Nashville and you not coming.
I hope you do. And guys, like all three of you, I love coming on. David, who always texts me to make sure I'm there. It's a 5-year time. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas, guys. And Happy New Year and Merry Christmas to all the great hockey fans of Nashville, Tennessee.
Thank you, Elliot. Thank you. 615-737-1025. We will react to what Elliot Freeman had to say. You can as well at 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Wow. What a tongue twister. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. That's what I get for talking too fast. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Always a pleasure to talk to Elliot Freeman. And it's a shame that Elliot won't be in Nashville on Saturday when the Maple Leafs are in town to take on the Predators on Hockey Night in Canada. His podcast co-host, Kyle Bukauskas, will be at Bridgestone Arena.
Have you ever met him?
I have.
Okay, I need to meet Kyle Bukauskas. I'm going to try to see
lovely
him
man.
I hear great things about him.
Outstanding hair. Just incredible hair.
Well, it gets talked about on their podcast
yes.
a lot.
Incredible hair. Anyway, I'm a little envious of that, as you know, for those of you who know me or are watching the stream. So Elliot continues to link Ryan O'Reilly to the New Jersey Devils. He's mentioned it on Hockey Night in Canada, and he's mentioned it with us multiple times, that apparently there appears to be a match made in heaven between the New Jersey Devils and Ryan O'Reilly. The Devils missed out on Quinn Hughes. Everybody expected the Devils to land Quinn Hughes. Both of his brothers, Jack and Luke, play for the Devils, so it would be a family affair. Ultimately, that didn't happen. The Wild acquired Quinn Hughes. And by the way, the Predators will see Quinn Hughes in the Wild early next week. So that'll be interesting. But we've talked about this a lot. The value of Ryan O'Reilly. Is he more valuable on the team? Similarly to what the Titans said about Jeffrey Simmons as a culture builder, as an example for the youth, all of that. Or is he more valuable as a trade asset? And over at ESPN.com today, I hope I'm pronouncing her new last name correctly because she's newly married, Rachel Krychak did a story making six trades that NHL teams should make after the roster freeze, which is, I believe, starts tomorrow. There are no trades, no transactions during the holiday, understandably. And she suggested that the Predators trade O'Reilly to the Capitals with 25% salary retained for a young forward named Hendrix LaPierre and a 2026 first-round pick. LaPierre is a center. He is 23 years old. He's played 116 games in the NHL. He has 36 points. 9 goals, 27 assists.
So what does that do for me?
It doesn't really do anything. It doesn't do anything. Ryan O'Reilly, first of all, I don't think the Predators need to retain salary on Ryan O'Reilly. His cap hit is $4.5 million. That is manageable. Quite frankly, he is worth $4.5 million, if not a little bit more, for the measurable impact.
I think he's worth quite a bit more with the way the cap is now.
Fair. With the measurable impact that he makes on both ends of the ice. This trade, suggested by Rachel Krychak, whose work I admire, I think falls way too short of what the Predators should get in return in a potential Ryan O'Reilly trade. But Willie, you always bring up this point. O'Reilly is not a pending unrestricted free agent. His contract does not expire at the end of the season. It expires at the end of next season. And although, theoretically, you could get a better return for O'Reilly by trading him now because the acquiring team gets two playoff runs with O'Reilly, he would still be valuable next season as a rental. So for that return, as suggested on ESPN.com, I say, no thank you.
It's not even, you know, it's hang up the phone, like get back to me when you're serious kind of thing. And for a lot of the reasons you said, retaining salary on that contract, that's not happening. Now, it's different if a guy is making $8 million or even $7 million. His contract is an asset to the team getting him. I'm not going to use one of a very precious few retention spots you have for that. I have a different perspective on this, I think, than most, because I watch Ryan O'Reilly virtually every day. So I see the influence he has on the young players. Because this would be a long-term move, right? You would be trading Ryan O'Reilly for the good of the team long-term, if that's how what you decided to do, right?
Yes.
You know that this team is limited with what their ceiling is right now. Best case, it's a miracle run to try and grab a very gettable wild card spot. And if they win Saturday, Sunday, you might have a little bit more flicker of hope. If they lose both, then it might just said, well, you know, it was nice. You know, that 7-3 run, that was nice. That's why I think it's interesting, because they ran up against an elite team last night that was a bad matchup, and they got exposed, right? And so it has you going, ooh, there's a difference between the Stanley Cup contenders and what the Predators have, and there's quite a considerable gap, and you're like, okay, that's a reality check. But when you look at O'Reilly's value, I don't think it's a simple, hey, let's see what you can get, because he is good off the ice for every young player in their development. The development of the young players. D-Mace, you talk about this a lot. You ask this question. How do you develop young players at the top, top level? Mm-hmm. You're not in the minors. You're trying to develop young players at the very best level in the world. One of the things you do is you put them around guys like Ryan O'Reilly. And also, when Ryan O'Reilly is playing with a Luke Evangelista, he's making Luke Evangelista a better player. He's bringing out the best in Luke Evangelista. If you took Ryan O'Reilly away, your centers would then be Fedor Svechkov, Eric Halla, Michael McCarron, and question mark, probably somebody from the AHL. Think about what that does to Luke Evangelista. The domino effect. What does it do to Fedor Svechkov, who would be in way over his head? Everybody's moving up. So the glue that you have with O'Reilly, there's a domino effect all the way down. That affects the big picture. It doesn't just affect, can this team make the playoffs? It's way, way bigger than that. So that's, to me, is why you can be as patient as you want and you can go for the king's ransom. And then you can walk away if you don't get it, because there is still a huge value in keeping Ryan O'Reilly here, who, by the way, I don't think he is dying to get out of here in the least. It'd be one thing if he was going to Barry Trotz and say, hey, Barry, look, let's be real. We're not going anywhere. Trade me to a contender. That's not what Ryan O'Reilly's doing right now. Ryan O'Reilly is still one of the few, like, the whole fan base could be voting, going, hey, let's tank it, man. Let's go for the high draft pick. Ryan O'Reilly would be the last guy in the corner going, no. We can still make it. We can still do it. And that means something, right? We talk about winning culture and things like that. So that, to me, is the central question with him.
A mutual friend of ours, Willie, sent me a text the other day, which I am trying to locate right now. And with the new, you know, iOS, whatever this is, it makes it very hard to find new texts. I want to read directly from our mutual friend, Jacob Underwood, who works on your broadcast.
No, I was on the text chain. Well, no. I know exactly what you're going to say, unless he's got a side text going with you. He's texting behind my back?
Exactly.
Is that what's happening?
Is
this like Willie's crazy text line?
What's
wrong with Willie?
This is what
just what Willie just said to me.
This is different from the text we exchanged earlier as a group. And I think Jacob makes a good point, so shout out to our friend Jacob. Jacob said this, quote, "The tenure of Barry Trotz will be defined by what he does with Ryan O'Reilly. Your absolute ceiling over the next two seasons is to simply make the playoffs and get eliminated in the first round. If you hold on to Ryan because you value making the playoffs more than the future potential of a better roster, .. That was Jacob's point.
And he sent a similar text to me. We've had this discussion, believe me.
Yes.
And so I think that discounts the residual that I've been talking about. What does it do for Reed Schaefer? What does it do for Matt Wood? What does it do for Luke Evangelista, Fedor Svechkov? And then there's about six other guys that I think might get a taste of it while Ryan O'Reilly is still on the team. And this is all with the idea that next year he will be in the final year of his contract. And you can still, I still think you could get top value because of how hard it is to find centers. And I'm not saying he's on the no trade list. I'm just saying you have a chance to swing for the home run and you accept nothing less because there is a huge value in keeping him around.
I understand your point, and I haven't been around Ryan O'Reilly as much because he got here after I stopped covering the team every day. But my interactions with him have always been pleasant. I can tell how much respect his teammates have for him, and I understand what you're saying. And Derek, I'm sure there are countless examples of veteran players in your playing career who played the same role for you as O'Reilly is playing for the Predators. But again, it just comes down to which is more valuable. That, which is fairly intangible, versus the assets you could receive to help jumpstart your transition, your blend, because Barry Trotz, like most GMs, doesn't like to use the R word, rebuild. It's a fascinating conversation, and one we are going to continue to have. I believe it's tomorrow night. NHL teams cannot make trades or any sort of transactions for about a week because of the holiday.
And
so
he's not getting traded by then.
But here's an interesting thing. This doesn't have anything to do with O'Reilly, but the double retention trades. There's now a 75-day waiting period. I believe if a team wants to do a double, if a team wants to get involved in a player retaining salary for two teams, basically, I think the trade has to happen by tomorrow. Or otherwise, Steven Stamkos, for example, couldn't be traded in a double salary retention trade. But I don't think that's going to happen. That's a side bar. Anyway. The Predators are back in action, not tomorrow night, Saturday night.
Isn't it weird to have 2 days without a game?
Yes. Saturday night at Bridgestone Arena against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Hockey night in Canada, a 6 p.m. Central puck drop, 5 p.m. pregame, right here on 102.5 The Game. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Predators, Cam Ward and the Titans, the college football playoff. We've covered it all today. And we'll wrap up the show coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Tomorrow on the program, Scott Ramsey, president and CEO of the Music City Bowl, will join us at 3:40 to talk about the matchup between Tennessee and Illinois. We also have one more pair of Music City Bowl tickets to give away. So be listening for that. Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will also join us in the 4 o'clock hour tomorrow. But I want to end the show by giving a shout out. I want to give a shout out to Nolan McGill. You've never heard of Nolan McGill, but you may have seen him on social media. Nolan McGill is a young man in elementary school, Rivermont Elementary School to be exact, in Chattanooga. And young Nolan has gone viral for refusing to sing Rocky Top during his school's Christmas performance on Wednesday. He is a Georgia fan. And his mother took this hilarious TikTok of her son. You know, think back. You've all been to your children's Christmas pageants. They're cute, right? So these kids, these young kids are on stage, and they're singing Rocky Top, and young Nolan is wearing a red polo. I can't tell if it's a Georgia polo or not, but he's sitting in the back while his classmates are singing Rocky Top. He's got his arms folded with a scowl on his face, just shaking his head no. He wouldn't even do it for his own elementary school Christmas pageant, and I have to say, you go, Nolan McGill. You don't sacrifice your principles for anybody, not even your classmates or your school pageant. You go. I want, if my son, if Arlo's in elementary school, and for some reason their class decides to sing the North Carolina fight song, I want Arlo to do the same damn thing. I'm proud of you, Nolan. Your parents should be proud of you. I'm proud of you. I don't even know you. Good for you, kid. Good for you.
So where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line?
On what?
Well, participation, right?
You don't participate in something like that.
No.
Right? No, you don't.
Little Derek would not do that.
I side with that, yes. But I feel like, you know, it's the slippery slope. Somewhere the music teacher's got to go, you know, man, we've got it. This is music class.
Hey,
like,
I guess
her fault or his fault for, I don't know who the teacher is, but selecting that song, mm-hmm. which is, I guess, divisive in this case. Is he the only guy?
He was the only the one, only at guy. Least in the shot.
Like he stood
you're
on business.
You told me every single other person in the class is a Tennessee?
Well, you know. Some people are shy. Look, like yeah. I've seen videos of my son at school when his classmates are singing and he's just kind of standing there a little shy. He's not
sure,
singing.
Sure, sure. There's always those
but
kids.
But he was, this kid, this
he was
young,
defiant.
Nolan, he was defiant is the perfect word. He was defiant. Mm-hmm. In his mind, he's going, hell no, I'm not singing that song.
Stand on business,
hell
little
no.
man. Stand on business.
I will always remember this. ESPNU, when ESPNU first came out, they had this outstanding ad campaign called Never Graduate. And the commercial starts with this dad in the garage making something out of paper mache. And he's taking all of these newspaper clippings of games where North Carolina beat Duke, and he's just laying them on whatever it is. The commercial cuts to his son at his birthday party whacking a Tar Heel pinata, and the camera slowly pans to his dad wearing a Duke sweatshirt going, yeah, get him, get him. And I was like, that was my upbringing, and that's going to be my son's upbringing too. These allegiances, they die hard. I just – look, Nolan McGill, you are an inspiration.
To every little kid out there.
You are an inspiration to fans everywhere. You never, ever sacrifice your morals because your elementary school teacher wants you to sing Rocky Top. No, you don't do that.
Okay, so let's say I'm the music teacher. I see Nolan. I say, hey, Nolan, I'm a sports fan. Mm-hmm. I respect that. The next song is going to be a solo for you. You tell me what song you want to sing. Maybe. How do you feel about that?
Maybe this is a Georgia song.
Exactly.
Jackson, it could be a Georgia song.
Jackson says,
Georgia on my mind. Ray Charles.
There we go.
Jackson says, why is the music teacher having them sing Rocky Top? Not everyone is a UT fan. That's the teacher's fault. Go,
okay.
Nolan!
I'm okay
Absolutely.
With that. I think that's a fair take.
My man stood on business. I like that. He shook his head, was like, nope.
Nope.
He wanted everybody in the crowd to know, nope, I'm not singing.
No.
Good for him.
I think it would have really brought the house down if he came back the next song.
He should have worn
the rest
Georgia
of the class shirt. Just kind of backs him up, just hums along with Ray Charles, and he sings Georgia on my mind.
Georgia.
I just, look, I get it. I admire it. I admire it. I think all sports fans, it doesn't matter if your teacher's like, hey, Nolan, I know that you're a Georgia fan. Maybe the teacher doesn't know, but, you know, we're going to sing Rocky Top. And Nolan says, hell no! I hope he didn't say that because he's an elementary school student.
I wonder if he just didn't say anything until it was time to perform and he said, all right, here we go. And just put the red shirt on and just cross the arms.
Nolan
and said,
looks
no.
like Nolan looks like the guy that when they were practicing, he wouldn't sing. He just stood yeah. back there. And they knew it. They knew it.
The class, I'm sure, knew it.
They knew Nolan wasn't going to sing. Stand on business, Nolan.
No.
You should have wore a Georgia shirt.
You would want your son in the same situation.
Absolutely.
There's no way Mahoney Donick was singing Rocky Top.
I would tell the teacher, we singing a Michigan? No, my son ain't singing that. Or my daughter.
What would that conversation be like if young Mahoney sang Rocky Top and actually saying it, what would the car ride home be like for Willie Donick?
Oh, it just wouldn't happen. That's just, it's impossible.
It couldn't even come out of his.
You can't even imagine a hypothetical.
No, it just couldn't.
You can't even imagine a hypothetical.
See, no.
Nolan, good for you, kid. Good for you.
There was a time when Mahoney, when Vanderbilt was a little down, wasn't that long ago.
You know, 2 years
Jerry Stackhouse.
2 years ago.
You know, football team dipped a little bit there.
Yes.
And he yelled at me one time. Mahoney's like, why did you make me a Vanderbilt fan?
What did you say? You couldn't say
I said,
much.
I said, it's going to turn. The worm's going to turn. You got to hang in there. I'm toughening you up.
The stories.
The highs will be higher.
The stories that you can share.
And then here we are.
Look where you're at.
The stories that you can share about your fandom. We all have them. I'll always remember, this had to be more than 20 years ago at this point. Duke was playing a game against Virginia Tech when Virginia Tech first entered the ACC. Duke was, if I'm not mistaken, the number one team in the country. And Virginia Tech had a one-point lead with seconds left. And I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to watch them lose. I wanted to leave the room. So what ultimately happened, Sean Dockery hits a half-court three at the buzzer to give Duke the win. I heard my dad react. I came in, and my dad read me the riot act. You don't leave the room. This is why you don't leave the room.
He got a point.
That's a good point. Life lessons.
You don't leave the room.
You got to stay in the trenches.
Stay.
See, that's why I always wonder what it's like to root for a team that's always, always good, and it's only championship or bust. Like, that would be weird. I don't know what that's like. Mets fan.
Yeah, I don't know.
Vanderbilt, man. Like.
Well, I mean, I'm a Laker fan. I'm a Laker fan, diehard. So,
but you've seen some tough teams. You've seen it sink to the bottom.
I've seen it. I've seen them with Van Exel.
Yeah.
Guys like that, you know.
Randy Fund is the coach. Remember Randy Fund? It's like, this is an NBA coach?
They had some lean years.
There were some lean years.
Oh, man.
Scott in Shelbyville on our conversation about Ryan O'Reilly says, if O'Reilly is to be traded, the price needs to be very high. NHL ready-to-go prospect number one pick. If that pick is not likely to be in the first half of the draft, then an additional one or high-level prospect. No chopped liver. That's Scott in Shelbyville about Ryan O'Reilly.
I'm leaning his way. I agree with Scott.
Again, we'll see. I thought Barry Trotz made an apt metaphor the other day when we had him on about the Avalanche and the Hurricanes being in the Premier League and the Predators being in the relegation league. I think
he said the Champions League. I don't know.
I don't think that's correct. I don't think it's the Champions League, but I'm not a soccer fan. If Nick Frazier is listening, he can tell me. But
3-2 Here comes the text. 1 Like Frazier, if he hears it, he'd be like, here's your answer.
Well, Frazier's already at the office Christmas party. Which is where we're going after this.
Fair point.
I do love a good Christmas party. Don't y'all love a good Christmas party?
What's the key to
do
a good
like
Christmas
party? Do y'all like
eggnog? I've never had eggnog.
Never?
No.
I'm not.
Really?
I can't say I'm a huge fan, but I've had it. So it's okay.
I'm not a huge fan of it.
Jews don't nog.
What?
Jews don't nog. We don't eggnog.
That's a thing?
Yeah.
It's a thing for me.
See, I couldn't.
Just for you.
I couldn't have said that.
Yes, Jews don't nog. Yeah,
somebody would have took it as me saying something wrong, but I'm glad you said it.
I don't know. I know it's not the same, but when I think of eggnog,
so
I think
no Jewish people drink eggnog.
That is,
he's the only
or
one.
Or it's just you and maybe a couple of others.
I can't speak for all Jews.
Okay.
But I don't. So therefore, all Jews don't in my own mind.
All right.
But here's the thing: anytime I think about eggnog, I think about like Rocky drinking like raw egg yolks.
And you know how many people tried that when they saw Rocky do that? That's nasty. Did you do it, Willie?
The raw eggs?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no. I couldn't do
I'll
that.
Throw them in the blender. I'm not an egg
hold on,
person.
Hold on. You throw raw eggs in a blender and then drink it?
With, like, other stuff. Like, smoothie stuff. Like, if you're making, throw bananas and fruit.
I'm still
and
not putting raw eggs in my smoothie. No. Willie.
But like I assume,
you like it?
I know that eggnog is.
I can't taste them. That's why. Okay. I know they're in there, but I can't really taste because I'm not a fan of the flavor of eggs. Really, not much.
Okay. You like my my daughter? She's not a big egg person either.
But like I know eggnog is not the raw yolks. But whenever I think of eggnog, I think of that. I'm like, this can't taste good. I don't want to taste this.
Okay, I never looked on the back of an eggnog carton, but what what does it consist of? Because there's other stuff besides.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird.
What does it consist of outside of the normal stuff?
Well, I remember.
Gives it the
nougat?
Taste in
it. Is that what it is? Like, I don't know. It's sweet.
Nate Bargatze did a Christmas special last year, and he did they did a take on the George Washington skits that he does on Saturday Night Live, but it was about, you know, the birth of Jesus, and he was talking about, and you know, people will drink eggnog, and the person said, and what's in that? He goes, egg and nog.
It's eggnog spoiled milk with sugar in it.
It has spices like nutmeg in it. That's what it's
called. I was thinking nutmeg.
So it's spoiled milk with nutmeg and sugar. That's what it is.
Heavy cream.
That doesn't sound
good. Heavy
cream? Yeah, it doesn't.
It does not sound good to me.
For all the eggnog lovers out there, I have nothing against you.
I appreciate all of our eggnog drinking listeners.
Exactly.
Don't let me convince you otherwise.
I know people like to add little something to their eggnog.
Right. Just a little something.
I get it.
I don't go into the party saying, do you guys have any eggnog? I'm not that guy.
Who got the eggnog?
But if somebody says, hey, you want a little eggnog? And they hand it to me, I'll say, okay, all right, I'll take it.
Willie, but it has to have something additional
It doesn't hurt.
Let's leave on this text. One texter says, I've been to several Predators games, and when they play Rocky Slop, I'm putting up the double middle finger salute until that abomination ends. That's right. You go, Nolan of Chattanooga. Stand on business. Never sacrifice your principles for your fandom. And that'll do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow at, I was about to say 6 o'clock. Now it's 6 o'clock. We'll be back at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Scott Ramsey will join us. Chad Withrow will join us. We have one more pair of, I can't talk. Too much eggnog on the mind. Music City Bowl tickets, one more pair to give away. We will do that tomorrow. And that's when we will talk to you tomorrow at 3.
Be love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear this song. Don't you forget about us, because we will never forget about you. See you tomorrow, 3 p.m. on this station, 102.5 The Game. Peace.